This is a summary of the Kremlin School of Negotiation by bestbookbriefings.com. The Kremlin School of Negotiation. Author, Igor Ryzoz. When you enter into a negotiation, you are basically engaging combat with an opponent. While theory will point you to what is intellectually the right course of action, you must never underestimate the value of real-life experience. More often than not, a street fighter will handily defeat a trained martial artist. In the same way, you need to know how to hold a negotiation against people who won't play by your rules. This book outlines a number of scholarly approaches, but it also has the author's life experience with negotiations, with businesses and public authorities alike. Mastering the Kremlin School of Negotiation. Negotiation is a science and an art. It has clear laws and methods, but it is also a gift that comes easier to some people. No single book or lesson can make a great negotiator. Negotiation can be seen as a kind of sport. Sport is an intersection of art and science, after all. Just as an athlete needs to train, one needs to practice negotiating in order to improve. Think of this as an outline of the training process. Is it possible to win or lose a negotiation? Many schools of thought believe so, with some insisting that you must win, or at least never lose. In the author's opinion, this is a dangerous mindset to have. When we think about winning or losing, we turn negotiations into duels. We focus on individual tactics instead of a general strategy. In doing so, you risk winning the battle, but losing the war. You may win the argument, but not achieve your actual goal. A win isn't always good, a loss isn't always bad. No one knows exactly how the result of a negotiation will affect a future outcome. Negotiations aren't the final stage, they are a process. The best thing you can do is to determine where you are in the process and what your next steps will be. Before we begin, it is crucial that you recognize that your opponent is a person, not a robot. They, like you, have emotions that influence their actions in significant and hard-to-explain ways. As such, there are three things that are particularly important in negotiation, which we will be discussing. 1. Can you defend your interests? 2. Can you manage your emotions? 3. Can you manage the emotions of others? It is important to know what kind of negotiation you are in. Does your opponent aim to 1. Make a new agreement. Extend it. Revise it. 2. Normalize relations from conflict to cooperation. 3. Gather information like contacts or points of views. 4. Mislead the opponent. Waste their time, or make them believe something untrue. 5. Provocation. To show that the opponent is unable to negotiate. To succeed in negotiating, it is important to be able to defend one's own interests. However, this alone is not enough. When we defend our own interests, we can lay down traps for ourselves in the form of emotions, which only get in the way. The Kremlin School of Negotiation relies on being able to stay cool and rational, no matter what. Born out of the Soviet Union in the 1920s, it is a tough and decisive method that was the backbone of the country's diplomatic relations in a brutal time. The Kremlin School of Negotiation has 5 steps. 1. Keep quiet and pay attention to what your opponent says. People are talkative. When they are listened to, they expose themselves by answering unspoken questions and giving away information in the process. Listening also gains us the favor of our opponent. If they see that we are genuinely interested, they will want to be useful to us. On your part, you must be careful what you say. Every word must be carefully weighed, or else they may be used against you. 2. Ask questions. In doing so, you can steer the conversation. This is especially crucial at the start of a negotiation, as it puts you in the position of the host, which allows you to control the agenda. The person who leads is the one who asks the questions, not the one who does the most talking. It is important that you fight for this role. If you notice that you're being asked more questions than are needed, be aware that each question is drawing you away from your goal. When this happens, you need to take back the initiative. After you answer a question, always ask a counter question. 3. Impose a scale of values. Whoever plays the host will introduce their value system, how important something or someone is. With this, they can lift up or bring down the guest's value with questions like, "You think you're special? You think I can't get this anywhere else?" This further puts them in a subordinate role. 4. Roll out the red carpet. When someone is in a subordinate role, they will do whatever they can to get out of it. When a negotiator is backed up against a wall, they have three options: attack, escape, or play dead. None of these options will lead to great results for the negotiation. The goal is to instead provide them with a way out, an option that will be on your own terms, but will still appear to be a victory for your opponent, or at least a way for them to lose while saving face. It's important here not to treat the opponent as a role or a tool, but as a human with emotions. Make them an offer they can't refuse, roll out the red carpet, and let them walk down it willingly. Not only will they be satisfied with the results of the negotiation, they will be relieved to have found it. This method works 80 to 90% of the time. But what if you need a rock-solid, 100% result? 5. Put the opponent in the zone of uncertainty. Say something like, "I'm not sure how my boss will react to this," or "I don't know if it's possible to bring you in on this." This will put the opponent in a state of fear, making them unable to take a step back and rationally evaluate the situation. Overmotivated, they will beg and throw out whatever is needed to get another chance. The Kremlin method uses the pendulum of emotions to get results, swinging your opponent back and forth between positive and negative to influence their actions. Observe how these steps affect the pendulum. 1 and 2, the negotiator listens and asks questions, putting the opponent at ease and swinging the pendulum towards the positive. 3, the opponent is lowered to a subordinate role, swinging them towards the negative. 4, the red carpet is rolled out, putting them back into the positive. If this isn't enough, step 5 pushes them back to the negative, and then back again to positive to seal the deal. Karl von Clausewitz writes in his book on war that fighting is a trial of strength of the moral and physical forces by means of the latter. In battle, our willpower is key to victory. Everything else comes after. The same goes for negotiations. We need to have enough confidence and strength of spirit to fight for our interests. However, you can't just go in guns blazing and expect to win. Sun Tzu says that the victorious strategist only seeks battle after the victory has been assured. He who fights first and then looks for victory is destined to lose. First, you need to arm yourself. Consider how much you have of three key components: strength, means, and resources. If you have a substantial advantage over your opponent, then feel free to begin. In any other case, you will need to maneuver, make preparations, collect information, and support. It's also crucial to make a forecast for success. It's important to consider not only how to approach your opponent, but also how they view you. There are two factors at play here: importance and irreplaceability. Evaluate yourself on a scale of 0 to 10 and act accordingly. Low importance, low irreplaceability. Strengthen your position with the opponent. Low importance, high irreplaceability. Create value for your opponent and then work on your goal. High importance, low irreplaceability. Prepare your negotiation, arm yourself, and then boldly state your goal. High importance, high irreplaceability. Don't relax. It's possible to win the battle, but lose the war. Now we reach the stage of combat. It's important to remember that in negotiations, combat is simply the stage where both sides clash with interests. It's not an actual, physical fight. Instead, the battle is in the strength of will. Let's take a look at how some people behave when they're in combat. There are two factors to consider: confidence and courteousness. Keep in mind that a person's age, gender, or personality doesn't necessarily determine which category of combat they fall into. 1. The teenager, low confidence, low courteousness. Teenagers quickly make things personal. As a way to project confidence, they often speak and act informally, hoping to provoke. When facing a teenager, it's important to show that you are emotionally stronger. Once they sense this, they will change tactics and stop trying to provocate. Be firm and confident. Look them straight in the eye and hold it for a few seconds. Do not mimic their behavior. Fighting rudeness with rudeness is only good for letting off steam. Keep your goal in mind. Don't try to educate or moralize them. Teenagers often fight for the sake of fighting, and as Winston Churchill once said, "You will never reach your destination if you stop and throw stones at every dog that barks." 2. The mouse, low confidence, high courteousness. A mouse concedes everything and more to their opponent. A negotiator becomes a mouse when they are unsure of their convictions. This behavior is the least successful when it comes to negotiations. If you find yourself acting like a mouse, it's important to remember that you need to first convince yourself before you can try and convince anyone else. Now, wouldn't it be ideal to face a mouse as an opponent? careful. If you try to take everything from a mouse, chances are they will try to hide from you afterwards, making further negotiations impossible. Remember that negotiations are a process, not a goal in themselves. 3. The tank, high confidence, low courteousness. A confident person, but not a courteous one. Tanks are very common, as they often achieve great success. This model can often be seen in negotiations. The problem is that tanks are only good for getting instant results, and not for strategic, long-term relationships. However, even a tank can lose. There are 3 strategies for dealing with them. One is to meet them head-on, and prove that you're stronger. Another is to meet their toughness with softness, and throw them off guard. A third option is to wait for the right moment, and then apply a burst of force when needed, allowing you to break away. As with all other strategies, evaluate your strengths and weaknesses first to see which works best for you. If you find yourself totally unarmed and unable to apply any of these, then it's best to stay away from negotiations entirely. Remember that tanks will deliberately try to use their bluntness to push you into negotiating emotionally. They will use their words and their actions to try and keep you from thinking rationally. Once you are heated up, it becomes harder to control the situation. 4. The leader, high confidence, high courteousness. In negotiations, the best results are achieved by people who combine concern for the opponent with confidence. They keep their interests in mind without stepping on others. They understand their own interests and can assess if they're in a position to fight. They can see the big picture and their opponent's perspective. A leader doesn't prove, they reason using strong arguments. As such, leaders often reach their goals faster and at less of a cost. If you have a leader for an opponent, stay away from emotional pressure and tactics, as they will turn it back on you. Stay rational. When tensions rise in a negotiation, how can you regulate them? There are 4 options. 1. People. In negotiations, we often make judgments about people's values or their personal qualities. When negotiations get personal, they will get emotional. We know this isn't ideal. Stick to the language of facts, separate the person of the opponent from the issue at hand. 2. Ambition. Often, our positions mean more to us than the actual goal. We forget about the point of the negotiation in order to push our own ambitions. When this happens, we are fighting simply to appear strong and important. When you argue from a place of ambition, you are limiting your own options to what you feel is acceptable, making negotiations harder than they have to be. 3. A range of options. When preparing for a negotiation, consider every possible outcome that works for you. It's very important to know how to get to the heart of the problem you are trying to solve, instead of bargaining for your ambitions. People mistake having many options for a willingness to concede. This is untrue. There's no need to reveal all of your options to your opponent at the start. First, you must listen to what they have to say, and determine which of your options are appropriate, bringing them out only when needed. 4. Time. Emotions in a negotiation can be intensified or calmed by shifting the focus forwards or backwards in time. If you dwell on the past, negotiations become negative and eventually pointless, shifting to "why didn't you do this?" or "if only you hadn't." It's important to fight for the present, because it helps us develop a better worldview and perspective. Sometimes it's okay to put your goal to the side to understand your opponent better. Sometimes, you can calm things down by talking about the future. Discussing how your negotiation will affect you and your opponent in the future can help you focus on the goal. Creating a negotiation budget and understanding compromises. A negotiation budget considers all of the resources you use when negotiating. Concessions and defeat happen when a negotiation budget runs out, so it's important to keep these in mind. Listed in order of importance. 1. Time. Most of our time in negotiating is spent talking about irrelevant matters. Only 20% will actually be spent towards getting the desired results. Some opponents will deliberately waste time, drawing out answers to strain your budget. 2. Energy. It's one thing to spend time working, but energy spent preparing, traveling, and interacting takes a greater toll on us. 3. Money. Any negotiation process requires financial expenses. If these costs get large enough, we can get preoccupied by them and forget our actual goal. 4. Emotion. By far the most valuable element of your budget, emotions will affect how rational your negotiations can be. Furthermore, if you reach a point where you feel as if all of your efforts weren't worth it, you may give up and end negotiations before you even max out your other resources. So long as your negotiation budget is still manageable, you can continue to fight. However, it may be wise to reach a compromise before you max out your budget. Compromises are different from concessions because they are conscious decisions. The resulting benefit will usually be smaller than you initially planned for, but if satisfaction is reached, it can be acceptable. Negotiating in tough conditions. Sometimes, a negotiator will encounter a tough opponent in the form of a manipulator, one who identifies certain emotional strings and plays them in order for their own interests. Experienced manipulators can get you to react exactly the way they want you to. In order to counter them, you need to recognize which emotional strings affect you the most. These are the key strings. 1. Pity. 2. Fear. 3. Greed. 4. Lust. 5. Duty. 6. Curiosity. 7. Vanity. Think of a phrase that caused an undesirable reaction in you in the past few days. Write it down and identify which emotional string was affected. Once you recognize that an opponent is manipulating you, you will be armed and ready to respond. But first, it's important not to let yourself be rushed. Many manipulators will demand a fast, confident response. However, responding in this way can often lead to an unending chain of verbal attacks. Our goal is to shift the negotiation from an emotional mode to a rational mode. If your emotional strings have been plucked, use one of these methods to pause and calm down. 1. Find a distraction, drink some water, or clear your throat. 2. Briefly leave the negotiation space, walk around, get some papers. Find an excuse to get out so that you can cool down. 3. Ask a rhetorical question to buy time. Once you have avoided your opponent's attacks, it's important that you respond. Here are some techniques you can employ to put the negotiation back on track. 1. Reverse, clarify your opponent's concerns by asking them what you can change. If they truly mean to be constructive, this forces them to try and teach you. If otherwise, the pressure is on them to come up with a proper response, or just step back. Either works in your favor. Keep in mind that the reverse technique only works if the attack isn't personal. 2. Partial agreement. The more we criticize our opponent's views, the less likely it is for us to find common ground to move forward on. Before you get into an argument, consider if it's really necessary to do so. Is it a fundamental issue? Does it pose a threat to your reputation or dignity? If not, then it's best to just partly agree, stopping the attack in its tracks. It's important that you know when you fight your opponent and when to cooperate. 3. Connector. Not every remark is worth an answer. Often, just adding "an" is enough. If you know how to hold your pause, you can coax your opponent into giving up extra information. 4. Interrupt. There are two ways to do this. Tough or gentle. Either way, be clear and direct, but polite. Change your posture. Using smooth and confident movements, lean back, sigh, or even stand up. 5. Dodge rudeness. When an opponent is being rude, figure out what the real message is behind what they're saying. Clarify the message by asking as many questions as you need to. What makes you say that? What do you actually want to talk about? Once you've identified the true message, you can then move on to a more productive discussion about that. 6. A joke or a kind word. When attacking, an opponent isn't expecting a positive in return. Genuine compliments or jokes will throw them off. Sincerity in your remark is key to having it land. Making a joke at the right time is a trained habit. While powerful, it can be disastrous if used at the wrong moment or with the wrong people. Practice it when you can. Gently and discreetly change an opponent's point of view. There are certain psychological principles you can use to influence your opponent. Here are a few. 1. Reciprocity. By nature, we want to repay good treatment. We respond to politeness with politeness, and to gifts with gifts. 2. Consistency. When people give their word, they will work to keep it, even if there are negative consequences to doing so. 3. Social proof. We decide what is right based on what people around us think. 4. Liking. We are more willing to agree with people we know and like. People who are similar to us naturally fall into this category, too. 5. Authority. Society instills in us a need to obey authorities. 6. Scarcity. We value something more if it's less available. Building a negotiation roadmap. When it comes to negotiations, success is 70% preparation. There are many preparation techniques out there, but the one the author presents are based on a roadmap, not on scripting out the perfect scenario. Instead of predicting things perfectly, the roadmap starts with charting out a starting point and a destination which is accessible through a variety of routes, even ones that involve the opponent's script. Remember, you cannot win or lose a negotiation. All you can do is figure out where you are and what your next steps will be. Before you begin negotiations, you need to ask yourself these key questions. It's crucial that they are answered in order, without skipping ahead. If you do, you run the risk of getting lost. 1. What do I have at the start? The clearer this is in your mind, the higher the chance of success is. The first step is to gather and analyze as much information as relevant to your negotiation. You will need to distinguish fact from opinion and find out what information is important. Some details might seem irrelevant, but might be crucial later. Information is best extracted from people who are close to the source of it. The results should be clear and exact. What does your opponent want? What will they be arguing with? What is important to them? What do they know about me? What is their main goal? It's also important to know what your own weak spots are, so you can best defend them. 2. Where do I want to go? Your goals should be realistic and within your control. You must understand what is your responsibility and what isn't. As Robert Kiyosaki once wrote, goals must be clear, simple, and in writing. Concrete goals will draw concrete responses. 3. Is it realistic? Break your big goal down into smaller, more manageable goals. 4. How will I progress towards my goal? What are your tactics? Who will you be negotiating with, and who else will be in the room when it happens? In complex negotiations, it's important to consider every participant. One of them might be the key to breaking into the opponent's group as a whole. Who holds the influence? You might assume that the person who holds the highest position makes the decisions, but this is often untrue. Managers delegate to subordinates, CEOs answer to shareholders or owners. Where will the negotiations be held, and at what time? 5. What will I do if I get a yes? This might seem simple, but it's important to anticipate what version of your goal or solution will come out of the negotiations, and what action you will take after getting it. Will there be any consequences that come from reaching your goal? 6. What will I do if I get a no? You can only make complex negotiations if you actually know what to do if you don't get an agreement. If all of your proposals fall through, what do you do? Having these answers is crucial not only to eliminating fear from the process, but also in understanding what you need to do going forward. Answering these questions doesn't mean you won't have to come up with new ideas or fight for your goals in the negotiation. Rather, it means that you'll be able to consider them, instead of rushing into them. With all that, you have finally reached the starting line. Ahead of you lies the opportunity to practice and perfect these tools and use them in real-life situations. Negotiation is a skill that requires regular practice and innovation. Remember that negotiations are done by people, not machines. In spite of all our logic and rationality, we also possess emotions that can take charge. Good luck. Whether you prefer to read or listen, we have something for you. Visit bestbookbriefings.com now for more summaries.